Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Borussia Dortmund have won the European Cup Winners' Cup.
You can feel the passion, the emotion.
And Dortmund, against all the odds, are European champions.
Heya BVB fans, welcome to Believe in Borussia episode number 40. The new season is finally here and I got my guy Brian Straub with me again to unpack the preseason, the transfers, what are we still going to do, what about Sebastian Haller, and of course, how is the game against Leverkusen going to go? Without much further ado, we will dive right into it, but of course, first, a quick shout out to our sponsors at BetOnline, which is still the fastest and easiest way to wage all of your favorite sports, contests, and events with the first market odds and lines. And you can find reviews, news for every league, including Major League, Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, even golf, whatever you have. So head on over to BetOnline today. Use your mobile device to join today. Make your first sports bet with the promo code BELIEVE50. To receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. And we are back with my man Brian Straub from, well, BVB Buzz, for example, German Football Network.
Hey, Tilo, how's it going? Good to be here. Glad to be talking Dortmund again.
So let's dive right in it, man. You know, we had what felt like a very, very long summer break, and actually didn't, now that it's here. And we are back in action. The season kicked off. What do you make of, let's start right with a cup game. What do you make of that?
I mean, considering the opposition we were up against, I mean, the result was something, at least in my opinion, that should have been expected. Granted, you know, this is a third division team, 1860 Munich that Dortmund played against. But on the flip side of that, you know, last season we've had, you know, performances against teams in lower divisions, for example, the game against St. Pauli, that, you know, the team flubbed their performance. And then, so I guess looking into it, there was some worry, especially looking at, you know, the results from the friendlies, but I think the team really acquitted itself well. I think from start to finish, you know, they were in control. The press was good for the most part. Defensively solid. They didn't really let, you know, 1860 in on any chances. I think they only had one shot on goal, to my understanding. So I think they really managed the game well, and it was the first competitive game of the season. So overall, a good result, a good 3-0. You know, it'll do well for, you know, the confidence of Karim Adeyemi, who scored. He's new at the team. Jude Bellingham obviously put one in as well. And the man, in my opinion, that benefited most from this was, of course, Daniel Malen, because, you know, having the season that he had last season with Dortmund, him starting off strong and getting off the mark in the first competitive match of the season is a really good sign for him. So I think overall it was a really good performance from the boys.
I absolutely agree with you. Daniel Malen looked like a different player out there. I mean, I know it's early in the season. It was one game, but you could tell he came out there with purpose. And when you say we managed the game, that, you know, when we tried managing games in the past, it basically meant we stopped playing soccer. As in, you know, absolutely. It was just basically hardly any movement, just playing the ball all around in the U. That's not managing the game. How we managed the game against 18-6, and that's how you manage the game. We kept them so busy and the pressure on so high, they didn't even think about crossing into our own half, let alone threatening us. Like, this game was toast because we worked hard. And I really like that. And, you know, to be fair, yes, third division to be expected, blah, blah. At the same time, three Bundesliga teams already said farewell. You know, Hertha BSC, of course, you know, that's their annual gimmick. I don't think they ever want to reach the final in the Olympic Stadium. At least that's not how they play. I don't know if you caught it, but they were up 2-0 and then still gave it away against Braunschweig, who are, I think, in 17th place right now in the second division, losing their first two games. And then, of course, Cologne losing on penalties and Leverkusen losing against Elversberg 4-3. That's wild. And I mean, I personally think, first of all, Cup has its own rules, as they say in Germany. Secondly, these second and third division teams, especially like some of the bigger names like 1860 Munich, you know, who have sort of like a following and can build this like momentum around them, they're tricky. And usually the first round of Cup is dangerous because these teams already are way ahead of you when it comes to preparation. You know, second division is already underway. Third division, I think, also kicked off. So they are in full competitive mode while you're just getting your stuff together. So they can be really dangerous. So again, yeah, I think we really, really worked hard, you know, kept on coming. Everybody was competitive. I like that everybody kept on, you know, trying to keep the, you know, pedal to the metal. Yes, in the second half, we were maybe missing a little bit like the final 5%, you know, the conviction to kind of like add a couple of goals in, but we kept on threatening, you know, and didn't give them any chance. We like suffocated any type of like build up play on their end and kept on keeping them busy. And I think that was great to see. And I'm going to again also say that Malen, I loved that attitude. I mean, that Pistolero, you know, goal celebration, he looked different. No, he looked different than from scoring last season. Or did you think, I don't know, have you seen that Malen before?
He definitely looked a lot more confident. You know, he looked like he was more comfortable being the danger man for Dortmund. He was taking players on. And I mean, he did try and do a lot of that last season, but a lot of it didn't come off. But this time I feel there was a certain edge to his game, especially in the first half, you know, in the first maybe 15 or 20 minutes. He was really, really going against 1860. He was really, really going at them. And I really think he made that left-sided position, that I guess pseudo left-wing position, his own throughout the game. And I think he's going to have a really big season for Dortmund. But I think going back to the overall game as a whole, the thing that not shocked me the most, but impressed me the most, is that Dortmund didn't do what we usually expect them to do, especially against teams that are technically quote unquote inferior to them. And that's A, play to the level, and B, underestimate their opposition. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if you noticed this, but at least for me, the way that I saw them playing is that they took their opponent seriously. They didn't let up. They put them to the sword really, really quickly. And they were very efficient about it, and they didn't let up. And I think that's a really good sign.
I agree what you say, but at the same time, I feel like they respected them by not playing up to the competition. They didn't measure up to 1860 Munich. They measured up to our own potential. Like, you know, like Malen is the best example. Like Malen came out and you could tell, edge is the perfect word. He had an edge. He came out and he was like, all right, maybe I didn't have a great season or whatever, but y'all are third division players. No one can stop me one-on-one on this pitch. Not a single guy. And he just came on, he took the ball and he ran past them. Like, and every time he saw the goal coming up, freaking went for it. And you know that the angle for the first goal, like that, you know, that was really tight. And I mean, obviously he bounced against the post two times, so it has to be really tight. But for him to score it in that manner, that sent a signal. It wasn't just a goal. You know, what the 1-0 that early is always big because it influences the game, but it also sent a message to the whole team, like, these guys, they're not effing around today. Like, they're here, you know, to stick it to us. And when a player does that you know, in 10, 15 minutes, only basically see the heels of him, that does something to, you know, to your psyche. You're like, shoot, I'm in for a long night here as an, you know, Munich player. So yeah, I really appreciated that. I really like that kind of like edge, that mentality, like, you can't beat me. And I want to see that from more players. I mean,
If there's one player that scored that maybe doesn't need more confidence, it's Jude. He just needs to keep that level right, and maybe stop diving a little less. But everybody else, you know, I really dug. So yeah, so really great. And I mean, not necessarily, you know, to your point, to be expected, considering that A, we're not necessarily famous for taking these games always as serious and really playing up to our potential, and B, the preseason games, they were kind of crap.
Yeah, so I did watch a fair amount of the preseason. I did watch portions of the Villarreal game and, of course, the game against Sevilla. It's obviously...
So who did you like? Who did you like and who didn't you like? Top of your dome.
Overall, from all the games?
Mm-hmm.
Kareem Adeyemi is the first one that comes to mind. I mean, the energy he brings and just the overall, once again, using the word edge that he brings to Dortmund's game has been pretty damn good. Even though the results weren't that great, obviously, in the friendlies, you could see the work ethic that he has and his ability to both create and be a threat on goal. Because at least from what I had seen, he was definitely a player that was at least trying to do something. In addition to that, I really did like Rafael Guerrero from at least the offensive side, which, I mean, is something I feel like, you know, we always say he's great when going forward, but not exactly ideal when defending. But I really think he was very creative. He was trying to do something for Dortmund. And even on the defensive end, you know, he did try and put in a shift. So I do think that he was definitely one of the winners of the preseason as well. In addition to that, I think Jamie Bynoe-Gittens as well, his performances in the friendlies and just overall what he's shown throughout the preseason has been quite good as well. He's shown that he's, you know, not only a pacey, tricky winger, but he's also strong and able to get into the box and impose himself on the opposition. So I think overall, from that aspect, it's all been pretty good for Dortmund.
I want to throw in Prince Anning in there, who came, you know, in very late from, was it Amsterdam too?
Yes, he's a former Ajax player.
So I don't think a lot of people, you know, had him on their radar, knew much about him. We signed him pretty much a week before, I think, camp started. And then he came in there the first game and really, again, put the pedal to the metal. Like, we need that vibe in the games and in the practice sessions. Like, these players need to push themselves if they want to win something, you know, together. But that's kind of like what I liked about it. And at that one scene, I don't know if you saw that, where I think it was Kamara when he fouled Hummels, and then Hummels was bitching about it a little bit. You know what I mean?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
I don't know if you saw it, but okay, let me paint you a picture. So there's, you know, they're in camp, there's a practice session. They're playing like one of these roundabout games where, you know, a couple of guys chasing the ball, you know, inside. And then Hummels basically has bad first touch. And so he goes after the ball to try to pass it on. Kamara kind of beats him to it, but he puts his foot in it pretty hard and, you know, hits Hummels on the shin. And then Hummels is like, what the hell? Like, you're going in like crazy here. What is this? You got to be kidding me. Da, 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 da. He limps off the pitch a little bit, still like, you know, like complaining about it, like loud enough that the, you know, the microphones picked right. It up where the commentators were sort of like, you know, following the practice session. It kind of made the rounds of Twitter a little bit because Hummels using some profanity and it's Mats Hummels. But I kind of liked it because nobody else reacted to it. Like, Terzic stood 10 yards next to him. He didn't acknowledge Hummels. You know, he just kind of like kept on looking. Everybody else kept on playing. And Hummels himself, like, he got a little eye spray and then he went back in it, you know. And I'm just thinking, like, I like that. I like that there's a higher intensity. I feel like that's exactly our problem. Like, a lot of our vets back in the days, probably in practice, definitely in games, because that's what I saw, try to always bring down the intensity, bring down the work rate, you know, manage, quote unquote, the games in the wrong way, in my opinion. And these young players, and then also guys like Marlon or whatever, they have that chip on their shoulder, their edge, they want to prove themselves. They need to keep that competition up, you know, they stoke that fire. And yeah, I mean, Hummels, you know, didn't look very good in, was it against Sevilla or was it the Valencia game where he kind of like butchered that clearance?
I want to say that was the Villarreal game. Don't quote me.
Villarreal.
But I'm
yeah, yeah, no, yeah, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, like But you know what I mean? You know, like he thinks he has the ball. He makes a kind of like lackluster effort and then it bounces off of him towards the player. He blocks. And like this looks like something that happens during the regular season too. And it just doesn't fit with this whole like, oh, I'm so fit. This is the first time in forever, you know, almost saying because he was out at the end of the season that he had such a long break and is sort of like in the shape of his life. Then show it, you know, like don't hold back. Like, what are you waiting for? We have two other, you know, center backs now. You don't, if you're gassed, if you need a break, you will get a break this year. No worries. So, and he did it, you know, he did get a break against 1860 Munich. And now he's going to be back in the starting 11, apparently against Leverkusen, because Süle is out again with a muscle injury. So there goes that. And then maybe takes us right into that. What a segue. Leverkusen, again, who lost against Elversberg, lowly Elversberg. You know, good on them. They played actually a really good game. But four goals conceded against, I think, a Regionalligist. That's like fourth division. That's pretty bad. I mean, I'm going to lie. And honestly, Hradecki and part of that defense is pretty suspect to me. On the other hand, Leverkusen clearly has some firepower up front. So what does it spell for us? Like with them being kicked out of the cup now and probably coming with an extra bit of anger to Dortmund, are we still just going to take care of business or are we in for a hot dance, as they say in German?
I think, yeah, like, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, Leverkusen does come into this game showing off, you know, a fairly good attack. I believe we spoke about Adam Klojek the last time I was on, and he is a really, really potent attacker. He got his first competitive goal for Leverkusen in this game against Elversberg. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And,
pretty good.
Thank you. And Schick obviously off the mark as well. So, I mean, they will definitely be hungry to come in and, you know, get a result against us. But considering the fact that, you know, Dortmund has shown this ability to take their opponents more seriously, and there seems to be a bit more seriousness in the training as well, and players like Malin are, you know, stepping up and showing that they can do a job, I would at least hope that Dortmund could take care of business. Because like you've mentioned, you know, they played a fourth division side, Regionalliga, and lost 4-3. So Leverkusen, throughout, as long as I've watched the Bundesliga, have been relatively suspect, especially defensively. So they will obviously be a threat going forward, but I do believe that Dortmund have enough to get past them in the first game. And as they should, it would definitely be a good sign going forward and a sign to the league, basically, because at least in my opinion, going into the season, I was thinking that Leverkusen would be up there in the mix for top four. So getting a win over them would be very important to any sort of prospects. And it would definitely be a very big confidence boost for the team.
I think we just have to win every game. And while Leverkusen has the, you know, power up front, and yes, Logic looked pretty good, I don't know, it's still Leverkusen. Like, they just proved it again, how Leverkusen they are. And apologies to, you know, the billions of Elversberg fans out there. I just double checked. They actually play in the third division now. They won the Regionalliga, their section, and they got promoted to the third division. So, you know,
my apologies as well.
Elversberg, for anyone that wants to know, Elversberg now third division in the Regionalliga Südwest previously, and they play in a beautiful ground called Waldstadion an der Kaiserlinde, which translates roughly to a forest stadium at the Royal Basswood.
That sounds so tranquil.
Right? And that's where Leverkusen lost. Anyway, good, Leverkusen Bayer, that sounds also tranquil to me with aspirin. Okay, that was a cheap shot. But let's talk about for a moment not the elephant in the room, but the person that we're missing probably for a much longer time. And honestly, at this point, it's not even about missing or him coming back. It's about hopefully on a, you know, human level, this guy can come back and not even to be pro sports, just to, you know, live his life. And I obviously talk about Sebastian Haller. Quite a shock, and unfortunately not the great news that the tumor is indeed malign and that he has to do chemotherapy. You know, on behalf of from everyone here, I can only wish him the best. And as I said, not even hoping for his return to the pitch. Of course, we all do that, but just hoping he can leave it all behind
Yeah, obviously, from the human aspect of things, you know, I obviously speak, you know, just like any other Dortmund fan, you know, we do hope that he comes back and can just live a healthy life. You know, the sport obviously takes a backseat when it comes to situations like this, particularly with something like cancer. So, you know, one can hope that he'll have a swift recovery. Luckily, from what it seems like, prognosis, I mean, despite the fact that it is malignant, looks relatively good, according to what Sebastian Kehl has said. So his recovery does look maybe, you know, it's not ideal with the situation that he's in right now, but it does look, you know, it does look good in the sense that he will recover. So it may take some time. You know, the chemo is not going to be easy for him. But we once again do hope that, you know, he does have a swift recovery with regards to that.
Yeah, our thoughts are with him, with his kin, with his family, and, you know, sort your stuff out. And then when you're ready, clearly, you know, him being a professional soccer player and loving the sport, I'm sure he also is dying at some point to get back on a pitch. And that was probably the wrong way to put it, but you know what I'm saying. Like, but I think he will, you know, feel no pressure, and I hope we can give him all the support, you know, that we can from a medical standpoint, from a fan standpoint, whatever he needs. And yeah, and that he just recovers quickly and fully. And then we can talk about, you know, soccer again with him and whatever he wants to accomplish. And it's just always so odd, right, that you think these pro athletes, right, that they
live the healthiest of lives.
No booze, no drink, no nothing, and are in the best shape of their lives, and then you get cancer. So it's wild. But of course, unfortunately, as is life, Borussia Dortmund also still has to play. Are we set the way we are, or do you think we need someone, and do you think we will get someone to fill the shoes for now?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a tough question for both us and the club to look into. I mean, there's been, you know, a bunch of rumors going around that the club are looking at options for the striker position. I mean, Anthony Modeste has been mentioned. Paco Alcacer's name was even put in there. Krzysztof Piątek from Hertha Berlin has also been mentioned. But the most recent rumor that I've seen actually has to do with a certain Giovanni Simeone from Hellas Verona, which the club is allegedly going to talk to, you know, his club about on this coming Thursday. Granted, this is still a rumor, but it does seem like the club is looking at options. And it's complicated, not even from the Haller standpoint. I mean, yes, you have to look at what sort of player you're going to bring in, because you do have Haller that will be coming back eventually. How are you going to fit him in and another striker? But the underlying thing with that also is Youssoufa Moukoko, who, of course, is a player that Dortmund would like to retain. The player's contract does run out next season, next summer, I believe. So bringing in another striker, especially considering he was supposed to be the number two behind Haller going into the season, what sort of message does that send to him? Is that something that he will potentially keep in mind when Dortmund come back to the table to talk about contract negotiations and extensions? So it's a very tricky period for Dortmund, and it really has to be the right type of player. Now, going back to the whole Simeone rumor, I mean, with the way that with the profile of player that he is, granted, he's not one of the best strikers in the world, but he is a decent striker. I believe he scored 17 goals and provided 6 assists for Hellas Verona last season in Serie A while on loan from Calgary. So with regards to that, they actually ended up just paying a 10.5 million buyout clause for him to sign for the club. So any sort of deal that Dortmund would go for him, for example, or try to strike with him would have to be a purchase, at least in my opinion. I don't see how a loan would possibly work for a player that played an immense role for this club last season in Serie A. So, I mean, it really, really depends on the player that Dortmund bring in. They really need to bring in the right, if they're going to bring in a player, they're going to need to bring in a player that I guess is either more temporary or a player that won't destabilize the current hierarchy and, you know, send the wrong message to players like Moukoko. And of course, Haller, once again, who will eventually come back.
Yeah. The tricky thing is, right, with Moukoko, he still needs time, clearly.
Right.
I think he needs probably 5 more likely 10, even 15 games until he is really gelling with the team and I think a constant threat. What he brings naturally is a high amount of energy. I think you could see that in the tests. You could see that against 1860 Munich. He has really a big, big urge to score and attack. You know, give him the ball, he can move really well in tight spaces, get rid of a guy, and then just tries to get a shot off. Like that, he does instantly so well. What he's still lacking a little bit is timing the runs better. He's a little prone to get offside. He's sometimes running into spaces where others already are, or, you know, running into spaces that others could serve better. He's not the best link-up player at this point, but I think that's just a matter of experience and getting to know your teammates a little better, playing on that highest level, which is still a difference from practice. You know, you just got to get those games in, get your feet a little wet. Don't be threatened that whenever you give a ball away or run into offside that you're going to be sitting on the bench again for 5 games. Then you can settle. And the question is only if we do that, how will we fare as a club, right? We can't afford clearly to give Mookie 15 games and lose 5 and tie 5 and then find ourselves at place 10 midway of the season.
Right.
That's just not going to happen. It's a lot of ifs there. And the tricky part is also a new player costs money again, and we don't have any. You know, we already spent more than we wanted to. Seems like we can't sell a lot of the players that we want to sell. In terms of who we want to get rid of the books, like what's the most likely? So let's just line it up right now. Akanji, obviously, Hazard, Schultz, Brandt and Raffer. There's been rumors. We clearly want to keep Mookie, even though his contract situation you just alluded to is also it's also running out. Did I forget anyone in terms of getting off the books? Chan, maybe. I heard rumors about that, but I don't think that's very likely. So who's the most likely for us to be sold? What do you think?
Well, I mean, prior to getting on the pod, you know, the news was breaking about Manchester City's interest in Rafael Guerrero. I'm not exactly sure that would be the best decision for Dortmund right now to sell him. I'm not exactly sure. Because the thing is, right, you sell a defender and then you use that money to what? Get an attacker, especially considering there isn't really that many mature players in the left back position for us right now. I mean, yes, we mentioned Prince Anning, but the kid is very young. So, I mean, are we going to put him in there if we get rid of him? If we get rid of Guerrero with regards to selling to a club like City? I think right now, you know, what the club, I guess, would like to do, and I guess what they should be doing, is really looking for that market for a player like Akanji. I think of the ones that you've mentioned, I think he is the most marketable. And I do think that as the summer goes on, more clubs will be interested in him, particularly because there's a lot of turnover in various leagues for various teams in the center back position. So I think that there will be interest for him. And I do think that, you know, there is still a decent chance that Dortmund will get something for him. So I think that would be their best bet, because I think as of right now, he's the type of player that they can afford to actually let move on, because they already have his replacement and they can still get a sizable sum for him. Granted, you know, his contract also goes out next year. So I don't know how much exactly clubs will be looking to offer for him, but I do think that around 20 million should at least be something that the club should be looking for.
Yeah, agreed. But it's definitely problematic at this point because you don't know, right?
I mean, it's one big if.
If we wouldn't have that situation, I think people would be more relaxed, because if the worst case scenario is, well, we keep Akanji for another year, nobody, you know, will burn down the house. This isn't like, he's still a pretty decent player. I don't think he would, you know, cause like any ruckus or whatever. I mean, it will be a little more difficult to manage, but, you know, within means, I think this could be feasible. Now it's a little different, right? You just kind of, it's not just like a roster spot and an additional salary. It's also, how active can we become? Like what's our budget there? So that's problematic. And I don't really see where he's going, you know, because he seems really set on England. And so far, I only heard that mostly like Italian clubs are interested in him. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to observe, just because if he himself sets, you know, sets such a small pool of clubs, then this might fall through. And yeah, that won't be ideal for us or the player. But I hope the club steps up and is like, yeah, we want this guy, because he's a quality player. You know, like, let's not get it twisted. It's not like damaged goods or anything like that. That guy is a experienced quality center back that can help a lot of teams. But if he only wants to go to three of them and nobody wants him in return, then that doesn't help us. And it obviously also decreases his value. If you know, as a club, okay, even though, I don't know, Inter put in an offer, he doesn't want to go there, not really helping us either. So that's kind of a crappy situation. And I don't know, yeah, Rafa is tricky. I mean, he's obviously a great player. He said he doesn't want to leave the club a bunch of times. I think in the interview back in February he gave, he said he really likes Dortmund. His kids and his family like it. You know, I think they just got into school there. And I mean, he seems to be the type of player that cherishes or values a certain constant, you know, in his life, continuity. He doesn't necessarily seem like the guy that needs to be in the most popping city with the freshest clubs. You know, he just kind of like wants to, I don't know, have his family around, play the game. Yeah, also doesn't like the competition, to be fair. I think he kind of said something like that. Like, it was a little veiled, but he basically said, like, look, a new team, I would have to sort of like prove myself again. And I remember that so vividly, because I was like, well, you need to prove yourself here too, bro. Like,
right.
Thinking like you're walking into the team, which unfortunately he does. But anyway, I don't know. Rafa is tricky, but a Rafa with a few mistakes in the back every now and then is still better than whatever else we have as a left back at this point. And also can probably get at this point in the season. Like, there are just not many options, unfortunately, on the transfer market. So, but then who else? Let's say we get a deal for Akanji. We probably need to still sell other players. Hazard, Brandt. I don't know why people are so eager to get rid of Hazard. I mean, is he like playing lights out all the time? No, but I think he's still pretty consistent. I think he's, you know, very polyvalent. You know, you can put him on the wing. He even played up front. And that's another thing. Like, if you put a guy like Hazard as the number nine in the box, he's not going to be as effective as he's on the wing. But like, his best season for Dortmund, I think he had, what was it, 22, 23 goals and assists in the season 2 years ago.
Which is decent numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not like he's a scrub or anything. And like, what's Julian Brandt, who's more offensive minded, like, his best season was last year, and I think he had 17 score points, like 9 goals, 8 assists. So that's also not bad, but how's that, you know, good enough to be like, no, let's keep him? You know, he proved his worth. And the other, you know, and Hazard's output is like, you know, that's kind of crap, let's get rid of him. Like, I don't understand. And Hazard obviously is also stronger on defense,
right?
More versatile, stronger in defense, maybe similar production, maybe with an edge actually for Hazard, like the numbers, like, he gave the club more. So why won't we kick him out and keep Brandt?
I've never been of the opinion or a strong proponent of necessarily getting rid of either or having them be the main targets for sale in the first place. Granted, yes, you know, Julian Brandt hasn't lived up to the potential that that obviously we wanted him to live up to, that we thought he would live up to coming from Leverkusen to Dortmund when he did. And same thing with, you know, Thorgan Hazard when he was at Gladbach. You know, I for one was very excited when Dortmund signed him.
He is the best Hazard out there
as of right now. Yes, that is true. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, granted, as you're saying, you know, that they haven't been, you know, the strongest performers for Dortmund, but they have had some sort of relatively consistent output. And I think that they do end up, maybe if they're not the best starters at this point in time, they do end up being good squad players, and you do need that. You do need depth, which is one thing that is a point that I brought up last time we talked, was I didn't think that Dortmund had the proper depth last season. And I think they end up being quality depth players at this point in time. I think Malin and Adeyemi will be the first choices on the wings, no doubt, with Bino Gittens getting involved there. But there will be moments where they need a rest, and throwing Hazard in like the 60th or 70th minute isn't that bad, I don't think. I think there's worse players you could be throwing in there.
Oh, absolutely.
Same thing with Julian Brandt coming in for someone in the midfield, even Royce, you know. You know, our captain's not going to be able to play like all the games that he has played previously. He is getting up there in age, and we do want to keep him fit. So, I mean, you're going to have players that go in there. Granted, we have Gio Reyna there, but, you know, you can also throw Brandt in there as well, and giving him a certain amount of starts throughout and then bringing him in, you know, off the bench also isn't a bad look, you know. So,
I mean, I hear you on Hazard, and I'm fully in agreement with you. That's a great squad player, because, as I said, you can put him into, you know, many different positions, left, right, a little more defensive, all the way up front, and you clearly won't get, you know, a stellar performance, but you know kind of what you're getting. Like, Brandt is a little different, like, because Brandt doesn't produce when you put him on, you know, in a 60th minute. He needed like 5-6 games in a row under Rosa, you know, to start producing and showing something. So I don't know if Brandt is really a good squad player, because he needs too much time, he needs the ball too much to kind of like get into his groove. So I have more question marks there, but I hear in terms of, like, you know, you just need quality in the squad, and to your point, right, you can bring him on for a full game because of injuries or just load management, cards, what have you. Like, there's probably room. It's going to be a long season.
It's Dortmund. You know, there'll be injuries.
The work hip break and all that stuff. Oh, by the way, with Reyna, yeah, Gio played Sunday in the last friendly of the preseason, which was, for everyone that saw little to no action against 1816 in the season opener. And, you know, it's good to have him get back on the pitch. I'm sure we will slowly let him, you know, back into the first team, because his muscle injuries were quite a lot over the last couple of weeks and months. So we need him fit. We obviously want him to be fit in time for the World Cup, even though, you know, I'm a little on the fence about the whole World Cup in Qatar thing, but I know in the US in particular, everybody's very much looking forward to what the US can do. And, you know, with that missing out the last one clearly, and now having all this talent and finally being there, I can understand why. I mean, it's an exciting squad. But digressing a little here, unless you need to talk about the World Cup.
Nothing to say there, don't worry about it.
All right. Just getting back to, you know, we were talking about players and who gets out of the squad. I guess Emre Can, I think that's also a squad player that I would keep, just because he brings a bunch of unique things, like physicality, a level of skill that we usually don't have in players that big, even though he's also prone for the occasional brain fart, but like energy. I don't know. I think there's things in Can's games that are unique that I like and I would like to keep.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Emre Can is a player that Dortmund should keep hold of. He definitely plays more than one role for the team. Granted, I mean, you know, having him in the back line is always a little haphazard. You know, it's always a little anxiety inducing. But he is able to play that position. Obviously, he plays his usual center defensive midfield position as well. And he does bring a level of fight to the team that, you know, before the acquisition of Salih Özcan, Dortmund didn't really have all that much of. So, I mean, I definitely think he's a useful player to bring in for certain games. So I wouldn't consider him the very, very first candidate for sale either.
Okay. So of the five players we just discussed, I guess we didn't discuss Schultz, but I mean,
that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. So Schultz, Rafa, Hazard, Brandt, Can. Which two would you sell?
Well, I mean, as we just said, if we could find a buyer for Schultz, I mean, you know, that would be...
That's why I said two.
Yeah, I know. So we'll go with Schultz first. That is really tough. I mean, from the prospect of depth, I would say that in Brent's position, we do have enough players. Granted, you would have to be twisting my arm at this point with regards to that, but I would have to say Brent, only because of the fact that in the other positions, we do need those other players for depth. And you're making me pick two. If it was just one, the answer would be very clear. But I also think there is a market for Brent. I do think that if he were to leave Dortmund, there would be teams out there willing to go for him. But also on top of that, I feel like it would be a good opportunity for him to actually once again show what he's able to do. But this isn't me at all in any way advocating for this. Once again, I'm of the opinion that, you know, him staying is good for the team as a squad player.
That's kind of boring because, I mean,
I'm sorry.
I think exactly the same. Like, not only because we have a lot of offensive weapons that are sort of having the same or a similar like profile and skill set. And yes, Brandt also has some unique, you know, moves in this game, but that can be said about many players up front. We don't have that much depth in the back. We don't have that much physicality. And to your point, offensive minded players are just like score better value in the market. You know, that's no secret. And Brandt, at least with his pedigree and also with the surf perception, probably generates or potentially generates more money than selling a Paslak or
potentially more than Paslak. Man, you're doing him a disservice, man. Come on.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, let's say Meunier, who I think has, you know, a higher pedigree obviously than Paslak.
Right.
But yeah, and I mean, honestly, I also don't want to dump on Schultz, but it's just like at this point, I think it's clear that for all the parties involved, a first start somewhere else would be the best solution. The problem only is that, you know, people think like, oh, he needs to go. He needs to, you know, just play anywhere else. But that's not usually how it goes. Like, I've seen plenty of players do that, you know, kind of like just leave to wherever, not really choosing wisely the next step. And then that's it with the career done. You know, he's not in a great situation right now, clearly. But at least, you know, he's getting paid and he's with a good team where he can practice on a high level. There's, you know, the surrounding logistics, infrastructure, medical team, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's all on a very high level. You know, people are saying, basically suggesting maybe that's too high level for you. Go play, you know, in something a little smaller. But then you don't have that anymore either. You know, it's not just about the money. It's also about the opportunities and the professionalism. So, you know, I think it's not as clear cut as some people say. And I mean, I think we chatted about this earlier, but I mentioned Grosskreutz in a conversation, and look at him, you know, people were like, he did what many people suggest, you know, he should just go anywhere where he wants to play and, you know, where it's maybe not as hard. And then he pretty much went from Galatasaray and he came back. Okay. That you can maybe still say that was just like a big misunderstanding. He didn't want to be so far from home, yada, yada, yada. But then he went to Stuttgart, second division, that didn't really work out. Yes, there were some altercations that also led to it. But at the end of the day, honestly, if he would have been the big difference maker carrying the team, I don't think he would have left. I mean, he left on his own accord too. Like, but it wasn't like Stuttgart was like, no freaking way, we're not leaving you out of the contract. You're staying here. You know, we need you. At least that wasn't my impression. And then he ended up at Erding, you know, like third division, fourth division. And that didn't work out. And he didn't really like help them achieve what they wanted to do. Granted, that was also like a widely mixed team, but it just shows like it's a very competitive sport in all levels, and you need to find a good fit even for Schultz. Like, if he's going to a team that doesn't play, for example, like a three back where he works probably best as a, you know, as a left back, or to a team that already has people in that position, then he's not going to play even in the lower tier team or in another league. And you know, how's that going to help him? So, and then he's going to still sit around on the bench and people be like, oh, he's just collecting a check. So anyway, just, I guess in a very long way, I just wanted to say, I'm not dumping on him, but like, people need to understand, like, it needs to be a fit for him as well.
Absolutely.
And I don't think, I don't think he's like just riding the bench with a big fat grin. You know, he's not Albert Streit.
If I could just, you know, put a little point there too. I mean, I get what you're saying in terms of finding the right fit, but to my understanding, there were teams in the Bundesliga that did offer him contracts. And yes, I understand what you're saying with, you know, him having a high level of, you know, training and fitness quality here at Dortmund. But at the same time, yes, like maybe you're training at a high level, but you're never getting on the pitch. Now you're saying, once again, you know, you need to find the right fit. But I think Schultz going to another Bundesliga level team isn't going to be that much of a downgrade. Like, yes, maybe he's already been on these high wages and experienced what Dortmund has to offer. But at the end of the day, if, you know, you as a professional player, you want to play. So his goal can't just be to sit there and wait to ride out the contract and just to train, in my opinion. I think there are definitely teams in the Bundesliga that, you know, he would fit into and that could benefit from his presence, because maybe he isn't at the level that Dortmund need him to be. But he was relatively good for Hoffenheim, for example. And I mean, you know, Hoffenheim just did end up selling David Rahm, which was a Dortmund target as well. I mean, possibly a return there. Is that so far-fetched?
I don't know, but let's talk about Rahm for a minute, because there was a lot of rumors and a lot of chatter about him going to Dortmund, or people wanting him to go to Dortmund. And I, for one, say I'm very glad we dodged that bullet.
Yeah, so the whole David Rahm thing was a little bit of a complicated thing for me, because, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not one of the people that was very much set on, you know, Rafael Guerrero leaving the club. Yes, he is a defensive liability at times, but he has been a good player for the club for the most part, and I do think he is quality. And I think when looking at David Rahm, that's a very similar player profile to what we already have. Granted, he is a German international, he is a little bit younger. But both are more offensively minded. And, you know, had we sold Guerrero and had Rahm come in, I would have been okay with it, because it would have almost been kind of like for like. I think the main difference between the two players is that Rahm is a bit more energetic and runs a little bit more. But when you look at it statistically, and I did a piece on this actually for BVB Buzz, they're really not that different defensively. Granted, yes, Rahm is a little bit better in his numbers, but it's not astronomical to the point where you would expect it to be a full 180 for the club, and he's going to solidify that back line and whatever. Because at the end of the day, you know, modern fullback is going to be more attacking and offensive minded. So had we gone in and got him, that would have been fine. It's just that it was just one season, which is also, you know, something that we look at with Nico Schultz. You know, he had one and a half good seasons with Hoffenheim, and we paid 30 million for him. I think paying that sort of sum for a player of Rahm's profile would have been fairly risky. I think had there been a better price tag for it, I think that would have been better. But at the end of the day, like you said, I'm not exactly ailing at the fact that he's not coming anymore. It was a little disappointing at first, because I also thought that, you know, both Rahm and Guerrero could technically exist in or at Dortmund simultaneously. You know, there's always been talk about, you know, moving Rafa up more, higher up onto the pitch, which I think could have been interesting. It's something that Terzic could have worked with, possibly. So, I mean, it's not clear cut. And I don't think necessarily that, you know, Rahm was that massive upgrade that some people possibly made him out to be. And I think it was a lot more level there.
Yeah, I mean, you said there's not much difference. I can think of a difference real quick there. Rafa Guerrero is a European champion, is a UEFA Nations League champion, is a two-time cup winner, has, like, I want to say at least 50 caps for Portugal, and, you know, probably as many Champions League and European Cup games. Rahm has, what, 3 caps for Germany? And I watched those, and to your point, I can remember conceding goals where, you know, he did the same thing, like, to your point, he didn't pressure the cross, didn't go out on a wing, just kind of like, he was just very keen to get up front. He's a very untested guy and I don't know how you put it, but like something about there's a bit of a risk. I think that was like the understatement of the century. Like, dude's in completely unknown quantity. Like, all the people are talking about it. Like, how many Hoffenheim games have you really watched? Like, for real, for real. You know, did you watch him against like Fürth and Augsburg and all these games? I doubt it. I doubt it very much. And even so, you know, that's still like, there's no pressure. Like, he wouldn't have been the first player who, you know, performs well in a team like that, that literally has zero press or anything around him that perform, you know, that puts any pressure on them. It's a very soft environment, you know, where we don't really can't get in trouble one way or another. And then you go, you take the next big step up, and then all of a sudden you can't handle it. You know, there's a little bit of a different lifestyle opportunity. Maybe there's, you know, more press and more public scrutiny, more pressure from fans. Like, I feel like Raum is more of like a Maxi Philipp, Schultz type of deal than really the help that people thought he would be.
On the flip side of that, though, I mean, technically speaking, he is the profile of player that Dortmund usually go for, you know, a player that's done well in the Bundesliga, granted only for one season, you know, a player that has shown that he does have some level of quality. I mean, there's interest abroad as well. And that doesn't come from, you know, him being completely untested per se, but at the same time, you could also have that argument about Nico Schlotterbeck, right? Had one relatively good season.
That's like a second season already.
But the hype kind of started more so this season, you have to say.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm not really saying there is a necessary comparison between David Raum and Nico Schlotterbeck. I think, you know, even in the games that Schlotterbeck has already played for us, he's proven to be a pretty solid defender.
And he's our center back number one right now.
Absolutely.
In a group with Niklas Süle and Mats Hummels.
Absolutely, which is impressive. So, but that what I'm trying to say is it's kind of the same profile, you know, a player that was playing for, I guess, I don't want to use the word inferior, but a team that's lower in the a smaller team, German international. And I think that's all, like, if you look at the interest in Dortmund, I think that was also a part that played into it. I do believe that the club has said that they do want to, you know, have more of a German international presence in the squad. So I think that was also one of the main things that attracted Dortmund to David Raum, you know, a player with potential that has shown that he has some level of quality and he's played for the German national team. And, you know, that would have been with Schlotterbeck, with Süle and him, that could have potentially been three parts of a back four for Germany for years to come now. So, I mean, I guess we'll see how he does at Leipzig. You know, at this point, he's going there and there's no two ways about it at this point. But I also don't think that, you know, Dortmund and I guess Dortmund fans should be kicking themselves too much about the fact that he's not wearing.
I disagree there a little bit. I mean, I'm curious also to see how he does at Leipzig. As curious as I can be about Leipzig, which is not a lot. I feel like they already have a player like that in Halstenberg, in terms of like skill and potential. So, yeah, I was kind of joking about it too. Maybe we get Halstenberg back now, you know. He used to be at Dortmund. And, you know, if you drop that kind of money on a new left back and, you know, also the kind of wage, which is ridiculous. Yeah, I'm very curious how this works out. I mean, I wish nothing bad to anyone. But if this doesn't work out and his steep ascension does not continue and Leipzig is kind of stuck in a situation that we are now with some of these contracts, I wouldn't be surprised. Let's put it like that. But the thing is where I disagree with you is to compare him with Nico Schlotterbeck. Schlotterbeck is younger than him, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just double check that. Yeah, Schlotterbeck is 22. Raum is 24. Still, Schlotterbeck debuted in the Bundesliga in, I think, in the 2018 season. So, and let me just look. What did David Raum do in 2018, 2019? He played in the second Bundesliga and in the Regionalliga Bayern for Fürth. You know what I'm saying? Like, and not even as a full-on starter, because otherwise he would not have been in the
fourth. So just for clarity purposes, I do, like, I'm not trying to compare them as players necessarily. I'm just comparing their situation.
I hear what you're saying, but I feel like Raum, like Schlotterbeck has a stronger body of work that is more reliable.
Agreed.
That warrants dropping that money on him.
Agreed.
Clearly, we have to need in the fit. Raum is a bit there's a bit too much hype for me.
And it was also a position that Dortmund desperately needed. You know, once again, like I said, you know, there is that similar player in Rafael Guerrero, at least in terms of going forward and attacking threat that Dortmund already have. So there's no real point necessarily, in my opinion, of making a one-to-one, you know, switch. But with Schlotterbeck, he's a clear upgrade on what we had, you know, so.
Are you surprised that he's the number one center back right now?
I mean, obviously, yeah, it is surprising considering his age. Granted, you know, we'd seen his quality last season and seeing, you know, even what he did in the final against Leipzig.
That was a great performance.
So you could see, you know, shades of the player that he kind of already is, but also can become. And he was very much the type of player, youthful, energetic, that Dortmund needed in that defense. Of course, you had Niklas Süle coming in with all the experience and skill that he has. So yeah, I mean, it is surprising to see him take that more leadership role. But at the same time, young players do come to Dortmund and take on that important role very quickly. I mean, you know, they do have a nose for bringing in really good young players. I mean, we see that just with Jude all the time, right? He's 18, 19, and he's already third captain, right? Behind Royce and Hummels, to my understanding, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm not...
And I think Chan is also in there, in the Mannschaftsrat, in the council.
Right. So, sorry, I'm not fully surprised, I guess, that Dortmund were able to find the type of player that Schlotterbeck embodies. But it is very impressive, considering his company, that he's really turning into or looking like he's going to turn into Dortmund's best center back for years to come.
I agree. And honestly, that's kind of like my dream scenario, that we have Schlotterbeck as sort of the tent pole for defense, and then Süle and Hummels kind of battling it out, because I feel like both of them are a little prone to, you know, letting things slide a little. You know, the rumors about Süle not always being as fit as he could be, as professional. And then Hummels also sometimes wanting to take things a little slow on the pitch, I think is great if they can push each other, because they also have a more similar profile. Like Schlotterbeck is just a little more junior than them. And, you know, he's going to be on a different level. To wrap things up, three things. First of all, Leverkusen, how are we going to do? What do you think? I think we will take this game at home. I think we're in good enough form and we have a much improved defense, so we should be able to withhold their onslaught. And at the same time, their defense is crap, so we should be able to score at home in front of a packed stadium. What do you think?
I'm thinking the guys will be raring to go. I'm going to say 3-1. Malin scores. I think Adeyemi also gets off the mark. And I'm going to leave the third for Royce. I think in front of the home crowd, he comes to life as well. And I think we have a solid 3-1.
That sounds like a penalty.
Possibly.
All right, I'll take that. Yeah, I mean, I would love for us to start with a clean sheet. So I'm just going to say 2-0. And I will go with, let's say, Marlon 2. I would like for him to start a little run. And then, tricky. I'm just going with Schlotterbeck. Let's go with a set piece.
All right. That's interesting.
Something from the back. Maybe not Schlotterbeck, but like a set the back on a set piece. I feel like we'll come with a couple of new set pieces under Terzic, and we'll try those at home, and hopefully we can put one away. And by the way, also big news. You know, I just talked about a full stadium. I don't know if you heard. Well, you probably did, but for everyone who didn't, UEFA allowed standing areas back in the Champions League, in the European competitions. So that means we will actually now, for the first time ever, play Champions League in front of 81,000 at home. I think that's fantastic. That's almost, you know, that's 20,000 people difference.
Absolutely. And I think it'll add a different dimension to, you know, the atmosphere that opposition, you know, faces when they come to visit us. I think it's going to be a lot more intense for them. I mean, any player you hear that's come to play against Dortmund at the Westfalen, you know, they all say that the atmosphere is amazing. This is going to amplify it, you know? So it's only going to make it harder for the opposition, which I'm for. It's welcome news for me.
Well, funny enough, sometimes I think it's not making it harder. Like, it's sometimes people are just, you know, wanting to see it, you know, like they're looking forward to it a little too much at times. Like Süle, you know, he said it in his like onboarding interviews with Dortmund, or like, oh, you know, it was great to come here and I was looking forward to the atmosphere. It's just big game atmosphere. And if you want to be a big time player, you're happy to have it, whether you're opponent or, you know, home team. Obviously, it's better to be the home team. But anyway, still, it's great news. For what it's worth, you know, having the full yellow wall, the Südtribüne present for a home game, I'm very much looking forward to that. To be fair, though, if there was a bit of a silver lining about putting chairs into the south stand, and for those of you who don't know, usually what happens is, since we can't have a standing terrace, for the Champions League game, the club puts in chairs. So that reduces the capacity from the almost 25,000 down to, 12,000, 13, 14, whatever it is. It's quite a reduction. It's like around 64,000 for a Champions League. So that also means that a lot of the season ticket holders can't be placed within the south stand. So the stadium gets mixed up a little bit. So there's different pockets of atmosphere all of a sudden, whereas naturally, normally might be a more quieter area with some more, I don't know, older folks or people that are just, you know, a little bit more in the viewing seating department of fandom. All of a sudden, there might be 10 people popping up from the south stand that usually would be in the middle of it, you know, under the roof of the north end. And they obviously in the Champions League go for it. So in my experience, that sometimes carries the atmosphere a little better around the stadium. So that was always kind of cool. But at the end of the day, if I have to choose between this and the stadium with, you know, almost 20,000 more fans and the full south stand, of course, I go for the, you know, latter. But I just kind of wanted to mention that.
Oh, it's a cool little fact.
All right, let's wrap with two things. Top of the dome, breakout player of the season for us. Who's it going to be?
Oof.
You had a little time to think about it. You saw the first couple of games. You saw the preseason. Who'd you like?
I think Bino Gittens is going to have a good season. I think he may not obviously play as many games as, for example, maybe Sancho did in his second season. But I do think that he will have a positive impact and he will make strides towards becoming that first team player.
Shoot. Okay, that was clearly my pick as well, but I'm not going to do the same then. All right, it's then a toss up between Reyna and Marlon. I feel like one of these two dudes has the potential, the skill, and just, you know, it's just due to pop, like to take that next step and become the player and live up to his potential that we want to be. So since we're, you know, catering to an American audience, let's say Gio Reyna. You know, that's here's the wishful thinking. Yeah, I think Gio can do a lot better. He's gonna, you know, have a hard time breaking into a team, but if he stays fit and, you know, he has the right mindset and obviously also the skill set, I think he can be also a really big contributor. Who's going to be our MVP?
Underperformer.
MVP.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said underp. MVP. That's a tough one. I'm going to say performance-wise and just overall in terms of being crucial to our play, I think it might be Özcan once he's fit and ready to go, because once again, I think he's definitely the type of player that Dortmund have been missing. I know we've mentioned that before. And I think our defense will be a lot more solid with him screening them and screening attacks, I should say. So I think he will definitely play a big role, especially if he lives up to, you know, the potential and the ability that he showed with Cologne last season.
I like that pick, Salih Özcan. I was actually just thinking about, you know, for breakout performer of the season, considering, you know, it's quite a step from Cologne to Dortmund up. You're putting him at MVP. Interesting. So you're seeing him getting a lot of game time then?
I do think he will get a lot of game time, particularly because, like I said, I think he is the type of player that Dortmund have been missing. And I think that he will be very critical in terms of helping shore up that defense. He'll definitely be very important in terms of, you know, assisting that defense in keeping those clean sheets and keeping those attacks stifled, because Once again, I don't think we've had that type of player in the last season, or basically since Delaney left, that really could perform that role. So, and obviously Witzel last season really didn't have the legs to do that. So, I mean,
agreed.
So I think he will definitely be one of Dortmund's more important players, and I guess we're calling him the MVP. So yes, I think he will be the MVP, not from a standpoint of scoring a lot of goals or anything like that, but he will definitely
be
linking the play up, linking both sides of the pitch and making sure we're safe at the back.
I mean, we've scored, you know, in abundance over the last couple of years, and that didn't necessarily always get us where we wanted to go. So goals is not always the measuring stick. I hear you. I mean, I think it's a gutsy call. I personally stay in midfield as well, but I'll take someone a little bit more established, LS younger, Mr. Jude Bellingham. I think we'll just keep on piling onto what was already a very impressive season, and I don't see what can stop this guy apart from injuries, and considering he doesn't seem very injury prone, he's in prime position to be even better. And when he's on his game, he changes the game for us like last season only, or the season before only, Haaland could. He can really impact it. And followed by that, I would say probably Schlotterbeck, just because I think he will see most action on defense.
Right.
And that's such an important part of our game as well, to have a stable defense and start the attack and, in a meaningful way, get the balls out quickly, moving into the right space. We could all witness how it's not done last season. So I think there will be a crucial difference to having that increased level of quality and consistency in that position.
No, for sure.
So, all right. Let's see how it pans out. Let's hope for a win against Leverkusen. And any final words of wisdom for the season?
Don't concede goals. I mean, the one thing that's been the bane of Dortmund's existence is being very leaky at the back. And I think they've brought in the players needed to help Berger Kobel, you know, keep those clean sheets. And I think they need to stay focused. I think like we mentioned, what they showed against 1860, you know, not taking the opposition for granted and thinking that, you know, oh, we're just better quality, so we'll coast through it. I think keeping that mindset and really drilling home that mentality will be really important to whatever it is that Dortmund end up achieving this season. So that's really it on my end.
Fair enough. Well, on my end, I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. We have question marks up front. We brought in some new players, but we will need time to integrate everyone. And then we have to see who scores the goal. Our main competitor in Bayern clearly also brought in new players. And Mané is a marquee signing, no doubt about it. But is he going to score 40 goals for them this season? And I doubt it. Where are they coming from? Is the league really the answer? Upamecano, the league Hernandez, is that better, you know, defensive pairing than what they had before with Süle and Alaba, for example? Is that better than Schlotterbeck, Hummels, and Süle? Maybe not. So a lot's up for grabs. I think Bayern is slight favorites still, just because they've been looking decent so far. But we will see. Let's look at the first 5 games and then see where we're at, see how we do, and maybe we can look a little further ahead what it will spell out for the season. Brian, thank you so much for joining again. Always a pleasure to chat Dortmund with you. And yeah, I hope your prediction comes true and we will take the home opener.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Always happy to hop on and talk Dortmund with you. I mean, here's to a good game, here's to a strong performance, and here's to 3 points to start the season.
Thank you for tuning in to Believe in Borussia again. If you like this episode and our content, check out the other episodes. Don't forget to hit us up, give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, like us, wherever you get your podcasts. And until the next time, a black and yellow shout out across America.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save